psychosocial grants, then I also have another security problem. So social grants payment is part of that social solidarity, but also creating a degree of stability within the country. So part of the thing that is that social infrastructures, the school, hospital, housing are funding mainly by government through traditional grants. And in the education sector, we're looking at education infrastructure grants, schools, infrastructure grants, capital. But if you ask us more questions over the next period before you arrive, which is a rather the late end, then we would be able to tell you a more better story around education financing and the equitable, inequitable distribution of resources, especially when it comes to problems with historical, what we call rural provinces, or clearly urban provinces, or the urban areas, human and where the settlement areas are. Because these things are not singularly, it's interconnected. How do you deal with infrastructure within a, let's say, the resettlement area, or squatter area, or something like that? I will stop there and ask Tasa Peters, who's leading education within the FSC, to take you through it. And I'm praying hard that I'll be back from the other committee where we begin to put forward our stuff because before the MCDS are the FSC. Thank you very much.
Comment on progress with respect to addressing those backlogs. So the regulations envisage some intense planning to go into this annual reporting, with MECs having to include short, medium, and long-term plans on how backlogs will be met. And very importantly, they also need to cost the plans that they have in terms of addressing those backlogs. So quite intense requirements. So what the table on slide 7 provides is just an overview of the main requirements of the minimum norms and standards on school infrastructure and the anticipated date for achievement of each requirement. So for example, as you will see, all inappropriate school buildings, which are those that are built entirely from mud, asbestos, metal or wood, as well as schools that do not have any access to basic services such as water, sanitation, electricity, those backlogs needed to have been addressed by 2016. Then progressively rolling out other forms of infrastructure such as availability of sufficient classrooms, electronic connectivity, issues around security, those need to be met by 2020. And And then in terms of providing schools with libraries and laboratories for science, technology and life sciences, the minimum standards on school infrastructure require that those backlogs be addressed by 2023. So very clear in terms of what needs to be addressed and by when. When we look at the next slide, the table provides an indication of progress in relation to these targets. And we source this data from the National Education Infrastructure Management System report for 2018. And basically what the slide highlights is progress in certain areas, but also some of the gaps that exist in respect of for example, with respect to schools that do not have access to any form of power supply, water, or sanitation, the statistics indicate that the Eastern Cape, for example, still has schools without sanitation facilities as at 2017-18. With respect to availability of classrooms, electricity, water sanitation, electronic connectivity, and perimeter security, we note that the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo have the highest number of schools that have fit latrines as their only form of sanitation. Then in 2017-18, KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape are the only provinces that still have some schools without electricity supply. Just to give you another example with respect to the backlogs around libraries and laboratories, which have the later implementation date of 2023, we note that it's your poorer, more rural provinces again that are lagging behind, with over 90% of the schools in both the Eastern Cape and Limpopo having the highest number of schools without libraries. At the other end of the spectrum, you have your schools in Gauteng and the Western Cape having the highest number of schools with access to internet connectivity. So again, there are areas of improvement, but these statistics also highlight the big gaps that exist. And the gaps are quite evident across the rural-urban debate. In that your poorer, more rural schools are the ones that continue to bear the brunt of unequal access to infrastructure. Moving to the next slide. As I mentioned, there's clearly gaps in access to just the minimum standard of educational infrastructure characterizes your poorer, more rural provinces. But this also coincides with glaring disparities that one sees in educational outcomes, again between your rural and urban provinces and between your less affluent and more affluent schools. So for example, if you look at the SACMET survey, the results show that rural provinces such as the Eastern Cape, KZN and Limpopo had the highest number of grade 6 learners that were both illiterate and innumerate, while provinces such as Gauteng and the Western Cape had the lowest. Then according to your SIM study, Gauteng and the Western Cape had the highest percentage of learners that scored above the 400 SIM point mark, which is your achievement at the lowest level. Limpopo, Northern Cape and the Northwest, as well as the Eastern Cape, had the lowest. So when you consider that over 90% of schools in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo do not have a library, or that over 90% of schools in Limpopo and Mpumalanga don't have access as other schools do to internet connectivity to aid the teaching process, you start seeing the imbalances. But it's schools in these same provinces that also just don't have access to the basics like electricity, like adequate and decent sanitation. So the learning landscape is made that much more challenging, and if we don't start to address these issues, what we will see is the perpetuation of those poorer, more rural provinces having the higher number of learners that are unable to take advantage of opportunities. Jay, if I can move on to the expenditure patterns in respect of education infrastructure, which is slide 11. We started with the And as you know, this program was introduced in 2011-12 with the aim of eliminating backlogs in school infrastructure, upgrading schools so as to align them with the descriptions of the norms and standards for the infrastructure. And then also importantly, eradicating inadequate and unsafe physical infrastructure. So the funding for the RCD program flows to the Department of Basic Education via a conditional grant known as the Backlog Grant. And whilst this particular grant was meant to end in 2017-18, we note that due to incomplete projects and programs still underway, the grant will continue running for the next 3 years before it is intended to be merged with another conditional grant, education infrastructure grant. If we look at the following slide, the figure illustrates the level of RCD spending over the period 2011-12 up until 2017-18. And this spending, which is the green bar, is shown relative to the total budget that is available for SEVEN, which is your blue bar. Now, on average over the period, the spending of available resources has been suboptimal at around 66%. So over the entire period of the resources allocated to this program, only 66% of the resources have been spent. We see that between 2011 and 2014-15, there was a consistent improvement in spending performance. This was followed by a sharp decline in 2015-16, but we note that as of 2017-18, there's been considerable improvement. It would be worthwhile for the committee to inquire as to what motivated this increased spending and also whether it is sustainable. But of course, good spending, if you move to the next slide, good spending means nothing unless it is accompanied by solid service delivery. And when we assessed RCD service delivery data, I mean, it was a challenge to get data that was sort of disaggregated by target and then annual performance according to that target. So what we show in that table there is cumulative performance. That was easy to access. So it's performance from the inception of RCD up until March 2018. And when we look at progress, what we did was to take the cumulative delivery and look at the rate of performance when you compare to the actual targets that were set. And when you assess performance in this manner, you'll see that progress in respect of replacement of inappropriate schools, those schools that are made entirely of mud as waste, etc., only 37.1% of the target of 510 schools was reached. In respect of decent sanitation, we are not halfway. Only 45% of identified schools have access to decent sanitation, and that's March 2018 figures. Provision of water is a bit better at 53%, and then with respect to electricity, cumulative delivery performance is at 94.7% of the target. And what the committee needs to decide on an empirical basis is whether this performance is acceptable, given the level of resources allocated to our city. I think it's close to 14 billion over since inception. Now, when we look at what are the key challenges hampering performance. As I mentioned, RCD is funded by an indirect grant known as the School Infrastructure Backlog Grant. So it goes to the National Department of Education, who spends and rolls out these projects on behalf of provincial education departments. Now, the MSP has been quite vocal on the use of indirect grants, especially where the utilization of that type of grant is based on the perception that a national department performs better than provincial counterparts. Our analysis shows that national departments do not necessarily perform better than their provincial counterparts. And if you look at performance of our CV, part of that starts coming through. Now, some of the key challenges listed in respect of progress include poor communication and sharing of information, slow procurement and implementation processes, inadequate management capacity, especially at project management level. Now, the problem is that the DPE appoints, in terms of the delivery value chain, the DPE appoints implementing agents. The primary implementing agent in respect of SIBG is ESCOM and DBSA. So those are the two primary implementing agents. Those implementing agents then subcontract to other implementing agents. Those subcontractors then use SMMP. So as you can see, there's a big space between who is accountable and who is actually implementing the project on the ground. And all of this case just obscures accountability. You can understand why poor communication is an issue. You can understand why information sharing becomes an issue. Because those that are right at the bottom on the ground implementing, they don't have the burden of being accountable in terms of being audited by the AG or answering questions to SCOPA, etc. So what we need to do is try and streamline this accountability chain when it comes to infrastructure delivery. If we then move on to the education infrastructure grant, this grant was introduced to accelerate construction, focus on maintenance, upgrading and rehabilitation. Now this grant, unlike the school infrastructure backlog grant, this grant is a Schedule 4 grant, which basically means that it is meant to supplement provincial allocations in respect of infrastructure. So your provinces must allocate money from the provincial equitable share, that discretionary pool of funding. They need to allocate a certain amount towards maintenance, rehabilitation, etc. And then this grant comes in and it supplements that. But what we have seen is that contributions from provinces towards education infrastructure from the PES is on the decline, and some provinces are relying entirely on the traditional grant for infrastructure delivery. And if you recall, the FFC chair mentioned that the 2018 budget cut, disproportionately cut infrastructure projects in order to cope with other policy issues such as funding higher education. So education was, education infrastructure grants was cut, the baseline of EIG was cut. So provinces are not contributing very little from the PES, and relying on the conditional grant, and now the conditional grant has also been cut. So we are in a very precarious position. You know, spending on things like maintenance, as you mentioned, those are the first things that get sacrificed with budget prioritization. So it is questionable whether in the current constrained economic environment, you know, it's questionable how far we're going to go in terms of getting close to advancing the infrastructure backlog. If we move to the next slide, what the figure there illustrates is the spending performance of the education infrastructure grant between 2011-12 and 2017-18. Again, spending is different relative to the total EIG budget. So of the budget that is available, what was spent. Now in general, EIG, this grant performance is much better than the school infrastructure backlog and because of data availability issues, we did this exercise for 2016-17. Now, what we note is that despite group spending performance, as I mentioned, on average there was 96% spending, service delivery performance has not been great. And the service delivery performance is depicted by the red bar. So whereas you add this 90%, this average of 96% of the resources being spent, only 59% of delivery targets were met. That's the average. There are big discrepancies when you drill down into the provinces. For example, Limpopo, over 90% of the budget is spent, only 23% of targets met. So some of the reasons for this mismatch between spending and delivery include the favorite procurement challenges, payment delays, poor target setting, inappropriate costing assumptions. So the committee needs to interrogate, are these the reasons that have driven the poor performance, and what are the plans that are in place to turn this performance around? Because at the moment that picture speaks to very little value for taxpayers' money. If we move to the next slide, and just a key challenge that we want to raise that characterizes not only infrastructure projects in the education sector but across all most sectors is this model that's followed when we're delivering on infrastructure projects. And essentially what this model does is it separates your planning and your budgeting and the implementation. So you've got your sector department doing the planning and the budgeting, aware of the timelines, the implications of what will happen if those timelines are not met. But as I mentioned, those that are on the ground are either aware of it, but also what is their incentive to stick to those. Because of the numerous implementing agents and subcontracting that happens and the distance between those that are accountable and those that are implementing, we have a distortion of incentive, and as you can, what happens is that accountability is weakened. And this is something that needs to be addressed urgently because it affects, fundamentally affects the road up the road. Some analysis that was conducted by the FFC during last year on the efficiency of infrastructure spending highlighted that value chain, that distance between who is accountable and who is implementing, it actually increases incentives for fiscal misappropriation, or simple terms, corruption. So what we need is really very strong, very effective oversight. The national department needs to actively oversee what is happening. The provinces also need to play their role and timeously and report on what is happening, so that the minute you see something is going wrong, you step in, you implement remedial action. If we move to the next slide, the next issue that the Commission wishes to highlight with respect to the education infrastructure grant is the incentive component. So, as I said, provinces receive this allocation as a Schedule 4 grant, and they are entitled to receive a little bit more money and incentive component if their planning is really good. The planning with respect to infrastructure. So what provincial education departments need to do, they need to compile provincial infrastructure plans, and if the plans are of a good quality, and this is assessed by National Treasury and the DDE, they receive that extra allocation as part of that grant. Now what that table details is the planning assessment results. So if you get if a provincial education department scores 60% or above, then they are eligible to receive that incentive. Okay? And it shows the results for 2017-18 and then 2018-19. So there are two things that I'd like to note with respect to that table. First is that irrespective of the province's assessment score, if you get 60%, you will get that allocation. There's no difference between the Western Cape, for example, scoring 89% and the Northwest scoring 61%. They get the same incentive. So is this really an incentive? Does it incentivize good planning? We need to rethink the structure of incentives that we put in place to motivate better performance. So there are two things. That was the first. The second thing is that you know, the inability of Limpopo to reach that minimum of 60% and be eligible for the incentive over the last 2 years should get some further interrogation in terms of what technical assistance can be provided to this provincial education department. Now, what we then did, if you look at the next slide, we looked at the planning assessment results and whether the provincial education department received this incentive allocation, and we wanted to compare that to the service delivery and spending performance. We wanted to see if there's synergy in all of this between planning, spending and delivery. And what we found is, for example, if you look at the Eastern Cape, it scored 62% for its infrastructure planning, so it received that extra money. And if you look at the fourth column there, you'll see its spending performance is very good. It spends the money. But if you look at the service delivery performance, it's at 29.6%. Similar trends are evident with respect to a few other provinces. So you're receiving additional funding and you're spending most or all of that funding, but your delivery is not up to scratch. Big mismatch. So the key question is whether these additional funds should be allocated to PEDs. If you're not utilizing those resources effectively and efficiently, and achieving value for taxpayers' money. Chair, that was on the two primary infrastructure components, the school infrastructure backlog grant and the education infrastructure grant. I'd like to now take you through our analysis of the non-infrastructure conditional grant. And here we looked at four conditional grants, the National School Nutrition Program, the HIV/AIDS Life Skills Grant, the Math, Science and Technology Grant, and then the newly introduced grant for learners with severe to profound intellectual disabilities. So starting with the National School Nutrition Program, we know that what this program does is to provide daily meals to the poorest 60% of schools, so those located in quintiles 1 to 3. Generally, over the period 2011-12 to 2017-18, there was good spending, on average 97.5% of the budget spent. Key challenges with the management in this grant include provinces not having up-to-date and accurate stock registers, and then again poor procurement practice. And then the provinces that basically, while spending in 2016-17 was quite good, and in 2017-18, those provinces that underspent are KZN and Limpopo. So they have to interrogate what are the reasons underpinning underspending there. If we move on to the HIV AIDS Life Skills Education Grant on slide 24, what the figure illustrates the spending performance of the grant, again, over the period 2011 to 2017-18. And generally, this grant has never been fully spent except for 2015-16, but the extent of underspending is generally not very high. Again, in 2016 and 2017, Limpopo reporting the lowest expenditure, with only 65% of the allocation being spent as at 2017-18. So something to interrogate further. Moving to slide 25, some of the key challenges in the management of the HIV AIDS grant include delays in procurement processes, misspending on funds on functions that are unrelated to what the grant is meant for, and then lack of capacity. Now, with respect to service delivery performance, in most instances, targets are reported to have been met. But something that we noted was a lack of consistency between data reported in the annual report, because we try to look at the annual report, and then what is reported in the conditional grant annual performance evaluation report. It wasn't glaring, but what we suggest is that this type of these reporting across different oversight tools be tightened, because it will just improve the ability to monitor and evaluate the true performance of that grant. But overall, the implication of the challenges that have been cited with respect to this grant, the implication is that we'll have delayed completion of projects, which could lead to escalation of costs as well as targets not being met. If we move to the next slide, which covers the Mathematics, Science and Technology grant. We note that this grant is the result of the merging of two previous grants, the Dinaledi Schools grant and the Technical Secondary Recap grant. Now, in terms of spending performance, we note that in excess of 95% of available resources have been spent. However, there appears to be a significant drop in spending in 2017-18. And the committee needs to know or be told what is the driver behind this underspending. Was it increased efficiency, so maybe less money to deliver, or what was the driver? Now, between 2015 and 2017, poor spending of the Math, Science and Technology grant was recorded for the Free State and Northwest provinces. The cited reasons for the poor performance lie again with poor procurement processes. And we have suggested that in order to improve committee oversight and general monitoring and evaluation of performance by stakeholders who are interested, the annual report as well as the grant evaluation report need to specify annual performance relative to annual targets. It just makes it much easy to see, to assess the state of play with respect to these grants. Then the final grant that we looked at was the one focusing on learners with severe profound intellectual disabilities. The aim of the grant, as you know, is to expand access to education for learners with profound intellectual disabilities. And this is a new grant, and apart from the Western Cape, most provinces have not spent the full budget available for this grant. Moving to the next slide, some of the challenges that have hampered good performance are just your general teething problems that you get when there's a new grant in the system. What we would suggest or advise is that some time be allowed for this grant to sort of take off, and hopefully performance should stabilize as the teething issues are ironed up. But note should be taken of these challenges that are arising, even in this early stage, so that we try and preempt and put strategies in place to mitigate them. Chair, the final few slides is our input in respect of equity in education. So moving to slide 51. So we know that the national norms and standards for school funding is the central cog in the department's plan to bring about a more equitable approach to the school funding framework. And as you know, the norms and standards on school funding takes a quintile-based approach, whereby quintile 1 includes the median school, and at the other end of the spectrum, quintile 5 is meant to include the most affluent. And according to the norms and standards, learners in quintiles 1, 2, and 3 schools do not pay school fees. Now, each year, the department sets the target per learner amount for each of the 5 quintiles. Provincial education departments then have to fund learners in accordance with those target amounts. And moving to the next slide, the table on this slide details the nationally set targets or threshold amounts determined by DBE per quintile. If you look at the bottom row, the line that's in bold there, it shows the nationally set amounts for each quintile for 2 years, 2017 and then 2018. It then goes on to show how each province performed in relation to those nationally set amounts. And performance varies with some provinces funding at the threshold amount. See, for example, Eastern Cape across all 5 quintiles for 2018. Some provinces exceed the national threshold amount. See, for example, the second last row where the Western Cape funding for quintile 4 and 5 schools in 2018. Far exceed the minimum threshold amount. We have noted that KwaZulu-Natal has consistently funded all the quintiles below the national threshold amount since 2014. And just we wanted to flag that for the committee's attention. Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape also show a similar trend of funding below the nationally advised threshold. So we know that delivery of education is labor intensive and that significant personnel costs mean that provincial education departments have very limited resources to fund other educational inputs. Now what we did with the figure on that slide is we stripped out personnel spending. And we looked at how provinces perform against the national average. And we'll see what you see there again is that KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo consistently spending below that average. Whether it's just a matter of poor budget prioritization or if it's a more deeper and complicated issue of adequacy of education funding, that is something that we can debate. But we need to find a better balance between funding educators and funding for all other educational inputs. Okay, Chair, I'll move now to the concluding remarks. And these are just to conclude what the FSC would advise the committee to focus on in its oversight. Firstly, with respect to performance of infrastructure and non-infrastructure conditional grants, what we need is more effective oversight, especially over your infrastructure conditional grants, so that the minute poor performance is evident, the national department can provide, in conjunction with Treasury or provincial Treasury, can provide as remedial action. What we need is clear performance evaluation framework for the grants under the DBE's control, well-defined performance indicators that can be tracked and that are based on quality, cost, and time factors. We need more effective and stringent penalties for those implementing agents who perform poorly. We need to disincentivize poor performance by these implementing agents that actually take advantage of poor oversight. Then incentives, especially that incentive component in the education infrastructure grant, incentives need to be linked to good planning, spending, and service delivery performance. You can't de-link planning from delivery performance as that incentive component does. Safe to say that if we do not improve the processes that underpin the delivery of infrastructure, the existing challenges and uneven access to school infrastructure, which currently exist and which disproportionately affect your poorer, more rural schools, it will persist. So we need to fix these processes and systems in respect of school infrastructure. Then with respect to equity, we note that policy and funding frameworks have attempted to entrench equal treatment of learners, but the actual mechanics of the funding framework largely disregard important constraints which disproportionately affect your more disadvantaged schools, such as the lack of proper costing. This is a key issue. All provinces receive funding to address backlogs and eradicate various forms of inequality, but if the interventions are not properly costed, we're not really setting them up for success. And then cases of persistent funding below the national threshold should be investigated, and the remedial or recovery plans need to be put in place. Then, as I think a final note, is the fact that the provinces where value for money is the lowest, where you're having a total budget spent by service deliveries in around 20%, these coincide again with your poorer, more rural provinces. Combined with the fact that we have a generally poor quality of education, the implication is that these learners will continue to be at a disadvantage. So I think Chair Alex, Prof. Lightsey would like to add something on that end of the end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Agustin, for that reflection of the sector. What I'm excited about is you're giving a clear picture of the full sector here, where we get the picture, what is happening in the province, which are the right things, and the group that's coming up with it. But we have a clear picture of what is happening, bearing in mind those in current council which already give us a program to say how to lead people and to get into the provinces. But with this report, I think one of the members were more armed, because most of the time what FFC has been giving us is to arm us more as we engage with the annual report from the department and our entities. These are the things that we need to look at and engage the department on. There are so many things that need to be done, and for me, as they continue to present, it says we always request the provinces sometimes that we get into one roof where we can discuss some of the things. And from the report that we have got today from FFC, it's one report again that warranted us as to say maybe very soon we'll need a day. I'm just throwing the proposal. We'll need a day where, as the portfolio committee and some representatives from the FFC, AFSA offices, DBE, we can be under one roof. Maybe the topic, just to be on infrastructure, is to say really, what is really happening on the infrastructure? Because the bulk of this money is on IEG that is directed to these provinces, where they need to account, where they need to brief us as to say, are we in any way nearing to reach the norms and standards that have been
put since 2013, because without the provinces playing their part, I can tell you we're never even going to reach or going near to reaching the Northern Standard of making sure that what is expected, we do get them from the provinces. So thank you very much, FFC, as I've said, this has been an eye-opener. It's going to arm us more as we move forward to engage the department. But I'm not putting you off the hook. If ever members have some questions directed to you on what we have raised here, but understanding very well that the bulk of those questions from this, we need to direct them to the department as we are still going to be engaging with the department. Can I open up for you, honourable members, if ever there are specific questions to the FFC that you want to raise out of the that they've given us? But again, FFC, Mr. Black, we fully appreciate what you have said at the beginning of the meeting,
yeah,
as to say maybe we should not wait for this period, yeah, to request you to come and assist us. As we are saying, there's so many things. If we go, you know, we are in this journey together with you. If you can give us the perspective that you have just spoken about, it is going to be assisting us as the portfolio committee. And really, on behalf of this portfolio committee, it's one of the things that you are going to be looking at, where we are not only needing you to analyze at the end of the year like we usually do, but we are promising that you are going to be featured in as we move along, so that we get the insights that you are bringing up to us. And also, okay, let me end there, but really we need more time to look at this thing of infrastructure and the conditional grants are the thorn on our nails as the portfolio committee. It's one thing that we always talk about to the department, is to say how best can they be utilized. So this is a very clear feature that we've got. Honourable members, can I open up if there are specific questions to FFC from what they've raised today? Can I start with you? And I'm going to allow me to be strict on this one. We've got a long day, we've got so many things. That is why I say specific question to FFC, because as I'm saying, you reserve the questions for the department that has been highlighted. Can I start with you then, Honourable Fasson, Honourable Costa, Honourable Mugodo, Honourable Bodes. For now, let me stop there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I understand you clearly, and allow me to say thank you to the presenter and honorable the chairperson, Mr. Plaggy. The presentation is really giving us a way forward. Chairperson, my question is just on point on what we have just mentioned. It's on the chairperson's first comment, when the person saw that it is a pity to meet at this time when damage has been so huge and the damage control is difficult. My question is also just supporting the chairperson's question, that is there any recommendation that you can give us how to improve on this in order to do damage control? And on the last, I had a lot of questions, but Chairperson has now given another direction. Thank you. On the last, just the last comment of the presenter, when she said investigation should be done for those who don't understand or who do not meet the threshold of nationally on those conditional grants. And what about investigation for those who are above? Where do they get the money to be able to give above, way above the threshold of national. How is the allocation being done that the others can be able to meet and the others can be over? Thank you, Chairperson.
Can you, Chairperson of the Commission and your delegate, just take all the questions so that you respond to them at the same time at the end? Honorable Khosa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I also want to thank this comprehensive report, Chairperson, and to also thank the Chairperson of the Commission for the manner in which he volunteered to be invited by the committee so that we can sit together and appraise one another. I'm just having one issue, Chairperson, to speak to. It's with regard to the issue of the companies and subcontraction. My observation might differ with that of the Commission, but with mine is that more jobs are given to fewer companies who are going to give subcontraction to so many companies that they don't have capacity to monitor. I'm saying this, Chairperson, because if sometimes when you are on oversight, you see some discrepancies in their performance, at times it becomes difficult to even access the person who should be responding to the issues that you wanted to raise. So I don't know from their recommendations there if they had also indicated that maybe it is very important, Chairperson, to say that, I'm also cautious, Chairperson, I might not know as to why they're employing fewer big companies. Maybe that we don't have sufficient big companies, but if they are there, I'm of the idea that they must be given this job and fewer roles of monitoring subcontractors, because here is where in we are having a serious challenge, because they also want to be saving much and not doing much of monitoring of those that they've subcontracted, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I also want to follow the line of my colleagues. I think they have appreciated the report. I'm on the same line. But my issue, Chairperson, is on the issue of the equitable share. Like one of the things that we are always grappling with as the portfolio committee is the way provinces spend, particularly the money that is directly meant for educational purposes, you know, that is supposed to serve educational purposes. I just wanted to get your view on that, whether do you engage provinces, because provinces, even if they get an allocation that this is meant for education, because of the constitutional, you know, structure, you know, they also have the authority to decide on how to spend their funds, of which you find that that decision sometimes puts education, you know, at the back foot of other priorities. And I know that in some instances there has been cases where the Commission made recommendation against indirect, using the indirect grant. So I just wanted to check whether there is that interaction, and if it is there, what does it say? Can you brief us on that so that we are able to really understand? Because as a portfolio committee, we always invite provinces to understand and to also make priorities known to them. And even the department, when we engage them, we talk to them about that, and they tell us about the issue of, the separation of powers, between the provinces and national, as stipulated. The other point that I wanted to talk to Chairperson is the issue of funding. We know that in the department, last year, we had a budget cut. And since well, the chairperson of the commission highlighted that they are the ones that make recommendation. And if you check on the report, they have also, given the report of last year, they have highlighted that some of the, a majority of the recommendations that you make, they have been taken and implemented by Treasury. So we want to know what is it that you are planning for this department, in terms of cuts and the division of revenue allocations, what are you planning? How are we going to get affected? Is it going to be worse than what we are having? I'm very worried, Chairperson, based on the fact that you go to provinces like Mpumalanga, Limpopo, KZN, and Eastern Cape, they have got huge backlogs of infrastructure delivery. And you listen to them, they tell you billions of rands. And you cannot say that they are not telling us the truth, because prices rise year on year. What are the plans that are in place to make sure that even though we have to do we have to take the budget cut, we don't also reduce the delivery of education infrastructure, especially to the needy communities, especially looking at the backlogs that are there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honourable Project.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. probably my submission also to Professor Blight is it's following with what our work have indicated. I'm more interested about what is the forward look in terms of the financial symmetry as it relates to basic education is concerned. And I'm raising it in the context, Chairperson, that the good thing is that Professor Blykes is actually an educational practitioner. And I think it's important for us to understand what the cutting of the budget and the information at his disposal. Do basic education in South Africa requires more financial injection, or could it, using the existing resources optimally, dispense with the task at hand? And I'm raising it in the context of a very worrying figure that says that, for example, in Eastern Cape, with the education infrastructure grant, it spent 100%, but only 29.6% of delivery. And I'm saying it's a worrying thing, because we will have to follow through some of his recommendations to engage both Treasury, the Parliamentary Budget Committee, because if there's a leak, there's a leak of funds somewhere. The leakage actually goes to infrastructure challenges. And Chair, the good thing of using implementation agents are regulated by a different sphere in terms of your PFMA. For example, in various provinces, they appoint IDT, as implementation agent, just on the verge of end of the financial year, they transfer the money. There's a different regulations in terms of the audit outlook from IDT than what happens with the actual department. Whether you call it fiscal dumping or whether you call it a smarter way of abusing taxpayers' money, I think it's important. I don't buy the debate that says probably one of the reasons why education in Eastern Cape have spent 100%, delivered 30%, it's because it's a complicated procurement regime. I don't buy it. I think we must call a spade a spade. There's abuse of our people's money. And I, in light of that, because that is a fact, what is the, we because you know, we are going to meet with the education department. And the main cry from Director General is saying that, look, we are underfunded. That is the main cry, it's underfunded. But then we get a presentation of this nature to say there's a bloated abuse of taxpayers' money, in particular, leave other programs, in particular with infrastructure. I think it we must commend the Financial Fiscal Commission, but like I've said, I think from where I stand, we need to engage the budget office, engage Treasury, and as a committee chairperson, look at infrastructure. And zoom in infrastructure before we conclude with the BRR process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Chairperson of the Commissioner, whilst you are going to be responding to what has been raised, for me again, the questions that you have raised from the presentation, I believe you do have something that you can say on. For an example, you have just lifted up the issue of the spending per provinces. I'm just making an example. There are so many of them per provinces, where you find provinces who are persistent in funding below the national threshold. For me, it's a you do have sort of an answer is to say what must be the causal factor for this. Poor budgetary, you know, poor prioritizing. Just talk to us, show us more. Let me make another example. On the spending on the conditional grants, you see now this year MSA Med Science and Technology, there is a decrease. I know as you work on these things, you might be throwing some insight again on us as to say what might be causing all these things. I don't say go and talk to each and everyone, but really as you do these, as you research, you go through these challenges, what is it that you can advise the committee on, and as we move forward, if we can get some of your advice as to say for the betterment of the country, for the value of the money that is being pumped to the department, surely you do have some information and things that you can share with us. Can I hand over to you then, Commissioner? Professor Blackie. He's just busy.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the questions and comments. I know there have been a lot of comments made, so ordinarily one don't respond to the comments because the comments are taken as a critical element in the discourse of looking at the issues raised. But be that as it may, I think I would try to answer some and ask Sasa to answer others where there is a need to deal with it. I think Honorable Boetius's question And also the point that was made by the Honourable Member on the subcontraction of companies, because the two are interconnected in parts. And then there's obviously the other loaded questions that was raised. Let me just respond to that. The fact and the truth and the correct response to why we sometimes getting it missed, wrong in terms of infrastructure and leakages. There's the value chain in infrastructure spending. And the value chain is about what the one aspect is, what do we require and the nature of investment, how do we plan around that, and what's the costing and pricing of that plan, and where are we going to get the funds from, and how will that be managed within our institutions. And that value chain sometimes is broken because we don't have necessarily capable people to do it. We don't have people that are actually competent and understand costing and pricing. Because your contractor can throw you anything, can price you anything. And people, there's a tendency that we have people in important positions that doesn't understand costing and pricing. Essentially, how much will it cost to do is to build a school? If you want to build a school, you need to have the land. So the land must belong to somebody. If it belongs to the state, then it's an easier thing. But if it doesn't belong to the state must purchase the land. Then if you want to purchase the land, you obviously have a step before that to check whether there's infrastructure. Whether there's infrastructure, electricity, whether there's water pipes running through it, whether there's a road close by to it, and how does it connect with the community around it, and how does it connect with the municipality, so you can actually also work out how much electricity is going to cost you, how much water is going to cost you if you run it. That's the costing and pricing issue. And before you start doing that with getting the contractor in, you need to have a sense as to how much money it's going to cost. And many a times, and that's the reason why we raise the issue about subcontracting and the management of that. Many a times we get plans, but we also don't know how to cost those plans. And the knock-on effect of that is that you're either under budget, as in most cases, or you're over budget. Or you have an element of the cost is running, the runaway train. Because when it comes to the contract managed, the contracting and the contract management, we also found one thing. And this is probably not a nice thing to say, because I always say it when it comes to my own experience and part of why we have so many court cases as a state, is that we have people that's qualified, they've got a legal degree, yes. But they have the practice. Have they been in court? Have they been able to engage with the system of the judiciary to be able to understand how to deal with highly competent, highly paid lawyers to be able to protect the interests of the state? No, they haven't. So we got legal advisors that sometimes don't have the capabilities. They're appointed because of an administrative arrangement, but they don't understand education legislation, or health legislation, or supply chain legislation. They don't have the specialities in it. So we have all the systems up in our country. And it happened also in the apartheid era, that we have generalists. You can't have a generalist in this day and age dealing with education. You need an education legal person that can do proper costing and pricing, but the economists or finance people there, because we also think that if you get a CFO in place, that's the answer. No, CFOs, with all due respect to CFOs, and I love them, and we also deal, but CFOs are bean counters, man. We used to call them bean counters, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? There's the issue of the economic impact of the costing and pricing. What is the impact of the service, so the CFO plus the people that understand is the economics of education and how it works.
Professor, be careful, there's a CFO
sitting there. I know, I mean, my CFO and I, we always have this interesting conversation about what economists does and social policy does, what. And we said to the CFO, no, you're doing a very important job, but we're not disputing that, because if you don't do the accounting terms of the PFA, we're going to be in trouble. But When it comes to costing and pricing, that's not the CEO's job. It's the people that are sitting in the supply chain. The CEO can say whether the budget is appropriate, etc., etc. But we always give all the stuff to the CFO, as if the people that are responsible for the policy line of these things are not responsible. There's always a circling of responsibilities, that the line manager is a line manager in as far as managing people, but the line manager doesn't necessarily have the competence of what the job requires. And you can't have, and I want to please say this to if there's anything that you don't like what I say, or that you don't want to remember, it's fine. But just remember this. You can't have a manager and train the manager and non-financial managers for management. There's no such thing as non-financial management for managers. Managers must understand the numbers. They must understand the finances, because that's a core responsibility of them. So they must understand how to do the costing, even if they just do one of those cost drivers, and let somebody else do the numbers there. So what we have is a problem also around the costing, the contracting. Because you can contract a supplier in initially and push down the year-on-year increases relative to what the market says. Now, our people need to understand what does the market say around the construction companies and that, and building and that. And we need to understand that. And the truth is, we don't have those capabilities in place. And as a result, your contractor sometimes, and I'm going to say sometimes, because we know instances where it happens, put together the contract. Suppliers, they put together the contract for civil servants. And they look at it and they sign off on it. Where in reality, the responsibility of doing the contract should be the principal, which is the department. They must develop the contract. They must say exactly what are the performance indicators. They must say exactly what the pricing. They must say how this thing is going to increase, if so, need to be increased. And they must have performance indicators. And the performance indicators need to be very clear in terms of the infrastructure spend that's going to happen with those outside agencies. And then there's the contract management issue. And the two is not the same, Honorable Chairperson. The contract management sits in the line that's responsible for that service. Now, we're also confusing it many times in your present report. So that's what we were talking about on the issue of subcontractors. And similarly, on the issue of financial, of the leakages and that. The leakages get created because the contracts are not tight enough. The leakages get created because we probably don't have capable people to do it. I mean, we got examples in certain places where people have strange degrees and qualifications that manage supply chain management. And you need to have people understand the finance and the economics that manage it. It's not just an administrative job. At a strategic level, you need somebody that understands that. To come back to the earlier point of that was raised by, and I'll come back to the other performance question, the issue of investigating underspending and overspending, what we're suggesting to the committee is that there are a couple of red signals, early warning signs, where there's an underspending going on, and we need to find out why that underspending. Because if you know that you don't have the spending capabilities, because your plans are not in place, because your plans aren't being costed, then the question is, was the money supposed to be given to you in the first place? Okay? And here's the matter, Honourable Members, Chair and Honourable Members. Every single department or agency, including the AFFC, will always say that we are underfunded. Nobody will ever tell you you're overfunded. Just remember that. The question is not whether we believe them or not. The question is, what are you actually doing with your money to actually create, to yield efficiencies? How are you spending your money and how are you actually prioritized? And whether there's been elements of waste, irregular, and fraud and corruption that's been happening. Because a leakage is also an element of fraud and corruption. And that's the key question. So you're going to get And like I said to the other committees, one should actually ask, how do you spend your money? And look at the proportional distribution between money that goes to the salaries relative to money that goes in goods and services. That's the two things that we will advise you to look at. Because goods and service spending, and especially infrastructure spending, are those levers for creating economic growth, for human capital development, but for employment. And we need to think about that. So the investigations, all that we're saying is that we think that questions need to be asked. We don't do that. We look at the different picture to get to that. So we don't use it as a front, as a facility to investigate. We use it to be able to determine why is there underperformance. Why is there element of access problems to our children? Why is the issue of quality of education? Why is the Free State doing in terms of education better than other provinces? And even if the Free State becomes second or third, one needs to look at what is the quality of education, and I'm talking about the matric results now. What is the quality of education that's been invested in the Free State, and how do they manage to do that? Because that quality is not going to dip, it seems to be going up and up and up. So that's why we're saying that the performance management, underspending, overspending is a performance management issue. It's a contractual issue between the Minister and the Director General. And that contract management cascade down to the different unit managers to where it happens. And it's a performance management question needs to be asked. And we know there's no consequence management in a range of things. And we need to look at that. Because the safest workers, and with this I'll be in trouble again, the safest workers in South Africa are public servants. The safest workers. I mean, I'm struggling to deal with people that have been caught in fraud and corruption, and I'm struggling because the Labor Relations Act and the processes and the CCMA, it just creates more headaches than anything, and you start managing a disciplinary process as opposed to managing the institution. So the thing is, and the people that's more vulnerable outside the public service are citizens. So we need to look at the consequence question so that people can actually see how the accountability works around that. On the matter of the equitable share, I think it's the chief of the committee that raised it. Departments will invariably argue for the equitable share component of the allocation. Now that is wrong. The equitable share component for education in the budget is not a proxy for the budget. The equitable share is not a proxy for the budget. The equitable share looks at the number of people within a province, the number of school going age, the number of people that is the health conditions within the province, and so on and so forth. It looks at the infrastructure, backlogs, asset management, and so the province gets a block grant in the form of the equitable share. Now, if it's the price that I said to the other committee, the price that we pay for democracy. And part of this price that we pay for democracy is that we have provincial government, which the constitution protects. So we either say drop the constitution and let's not do the constitution. But the constitution says there will be a block grant to the minister, to a province, and in this block grant, which is an equitable share allocation, which will be augmented at different times by conditional grants, which is based on national priorities. In this block grant, the province will decide how the money gets distributed. So you can't come to this committee as a department or as a provincial to say, but that money that's in there belongs to us. Because if that's the case, then we need to change our constitutional configuration. Then we need to say we don't want provincial governments anymore. But our job as the FFC is to protect that. Until the executive and parliament decide these crap provinces, they may have another thing. But the equitable share allocation is not a proxy for the budget for education or for health or for welfare or for any other mandate that the province might have in terms of the constitution. It's an allocation, the executive must decide. And the executive must decide so that it actually the budget deals with its own priorities. And if it doesn't, and if there's leakages, if we have the information and if we can get it and if you ask for it and give us enough lead time, we will come and tell you those things. From a perspective as to how the fund is not following through on the priorities set, national priorities and also provincial priorities, and where the funds are not going in terms of that. The other matters around that is that, honourable member, that raised the issue around equitable shares, we do have a problem. And the problem is, since the dawn of democracy, we actually haven't costed and priced education delivery. We haven't. So, to deliver education, I would assume to deliver education in the West, in Cape Town, Metropole, to Gauteng, to all the metro cities, ought to be cheaper than delivering education in the rural areas. And a simple thing is about where does the books get produced, the learner support material, and other forms of infrastructure. The other thing is that, do you have investments in those areas? Do we have laboratories? We keep on complaining about Model C schools and others, and the access and the quality. I'm also one of those complaints. But what have we done to actually bring the same resources to those areas outside the metropole and also in the rural areas? So your element of not being able to look at what is the adequate level of funding for school provision, it's got to do with the costing and pricing. How much does it cost to have the grade 6 teachers that failed with mathematics some years ago, but to have a real mathematics teacher in front of the of our children? How much does it cost to get that mathematics teacher? Why must children be in Model C schools, the old Model C schools, if I mean to correct that, and in private schools that you have a mathematics teacher teaching 12 children, sometimes less than 12 children? I mean, it's all our children. Why must our children be treated differently? So we need to look at that, and it's got to do with issues about costing and pricing provision. And we need to do it correctly, so that we were able to do that. On the funding cuts, honorable member, we agree with you, but, you know, you have to sometimes cut all the time you have to cut the size of your suit to the size of the cloth that you have. The fiscal space is so thin, and we're going to get can't talk a lot about it because we're too much close to that process. We're going to probably have a situation of robbing Peter to pay Paul, or taking from Peter to pay Paul. Or like they say in the rural areas, umarabaraba, you know, umarabaraba, you shift the funds around to pay others. But there is a thing that we would impress on the honourable members, chairperson, and yourselves, is that we keep on talking about value for money and efficiency gains. We need to find ways to push that particular envelope on efficiency gains, because there are many wastages that's going on, there are many leakages that's going on. There's also inappropriate priorities, you know. And then there's this thing about some pet projects. I mean, we can't deal with pet projects when in reality we're dealing with a social backlog of a Gini coefficient that fluctuates between a 0.68 to a 71%, depending who you're talking to, when you're talking to. Our people are poor, very poor, and the inequality is very deep. And we need to find ways out. So there needs to be this thing about looking at the inefficiencies and looking at the wastage. In fact, I would, if I had the opportunity, which I would never want, like what you guys have, honourable members, is just unbundle the budgets. Unbundle the budgets and look for what's in the budgets, and look at where, because every department, in terms of a national development plan, in terms of infrastructure growth, if you don't have infrastructure investments, your department can't create job opportunities for those that's not in the profession of teaching and learning, and learner support material. So we need to think about that. On the IDT spending and this, That's part of the problem we pick up, Honorable Witnesses. It's fiscal dumping. It happens across the country in every level of government. Watch out for January. Because if you can dump the money in a legislative institution like the IDT, it shows that you've spent the funds. Because you can't say the money's not been spent. The money's been transferred. And as a result, because what people, what CFOs with their, on instruction of their accounting officers do, if you don't want to lose the money for the years going forward, because remember, when the Treasury does the sweep of unfunded money, that money that's been swept from you will be affected in terms of the years going forward. So what do? To protect your baseline, you dump the money. And that's a practice that needs to stop. But you need to be able to look at it when it happens, what is the trends to it, and what has actually suffered. What has actually suffered, and how has that created this phenomenon of underspending in it? So that's got to do with how the optimal utilization and utilization rate of the spending, and that the number speaks for it. And it's probably conceivable that those provinces that is affected needs to answer. We can do that, but we can't do it immediately. We can write a letter, use our constitutional authority, and ask for that information to prepare something for you. But it's sometimes better to just get people here and dealing with it. On the question of spending trends and norms and standards, I think that the point that we're trying to make is that there's the one norm that says that in terms of spending, in the first quarter, you're supposed to already have spent a quarter of your money. Right? That's a soft one. Second quarter, 50% of your money. Third quarter, which is the three quarters of the year, at least 75% to 80% of your money. The encouragement is also 80%, because we know we got a dead, December is dead and part of January is dead. So that seems to be the normative trend that we were trying to illustrate on it, but I'll just speak to it. So the issue for us is the financial asymmetry that you're referring to. That's an interesting conversation that we need to have. Because that links to the earlier point I made of why the equitable share and why conditional grants. But it also leads to what are the numbers of children of school going age in a particular community. In the province of the Northern Cape, it's actually a hard issue. It's very hard because of the spatial areas between us. In Gauteng, Western Cape, and the metropole, it's probably an easier conversation to have. And it's the costing and pricing point I was making earlier. That, I think, that
I think just to add to what my chair was saying, just on the KZN spending below the threshold, when we did some inquiries, we were told that it's as a result of budget pressures due to migration. I mean, it could be, but just some rough analysis shows that with respect to scholar migration, the provinces that are generally more affected would be your Western Cape and Gauteng. So it could be that, but we would suggest looking firstly at what was mentioned in the slides. Is the budget prioritization process, is it correct? Because once you strip out personnel, provincial education departments have to allocate money to your national priorities, like the norms and standards, your learner teacher support material, and EMIS. Then they also have their provincial specific priorities, like scholar transport, teacher development, etc. So are there adjustments that can be made to ensure that for KZN and Limpopo that the funding flows towards those quintile 1 and 3 schools, I think we also need to interrogate what are the incentives that allow a provincial education department to fund below the national threshold since 2014, really, I think we need to understand that. Then just, for example, underperformance on, say, your math, science, and technology grant, that's a merger of two previous grants. And I think one of the things that the Commission has been stressing in its various presentations is that, you know, to address the issue of poor performance, you don't need to change the location of a function. Merging programs is likely not to work. We need to address the root cause. So merging the Dina Lady and the school's recap grant doesn't mean you're going to get rid of performance issues. And we need to understand what were those performance issues, because the systems and everything is still the same. It's just you've now called it one name. So we need to understand the root cause of poor performance. Thank you.
Just the last point that I want to make is twofold. A short one. We would strongly recommend that this committee in particular in health, for different reasons, has to look at issues through the lens of access, quality, and financing of basic education. Because the conversation can't be held without looking at the issue of access for all our children. Because if it's the system if the public education system is the same, then why is it that some of our children fall by the wayside? That's the one thing around that. And for a range of human reasons, from a human rights perspective to a constitutional perspective, just because of our children. That's quite important. And that brings me to the point of, I think this committee has got a golden opportunity to push the cradle to grave education phenomenon. You have a great opportunity to push that dialogue that needs to happen, the cradle to grave. And the reason why I'm saying that is that if we don't deal with children between the age of, let's say, 6 months to the time they go to grade one, I don't want to even talk about grade R, to grade one, if we don't invest in that, we're going to have another lost generation. I can't speak about my time when we were in the 1976, we were the lost generation, but then there was education investment in there to be able for us to do certain things. But we need to push this thing beyond grade R. You can't have a early childhood development program where education inputs, social health inputs, and safety and security inputs for our children who are exposed to these criminals. And you have a voluntary service around it. And people will say there's no money. I say to start with the money argument is the wrong argument. We need to be able to see exactly how do we create access. And how will that access be done? And what is the quality input that needs to be delivered? And I can say to you, it can happen. It can happen. But we just need to think the solutions of 1994 in 1996 is not going to work in 2018 because the paradigms are different. So I think I would want to leave from a financial fiscal perspective commission. So those are the two things that, if you haven't heard anything, if you don't want to listen to all of this stuff, those are the two lenses that we would like to push with you. And we need to push beyond grade R. We can't let this happen to our children, no. We need the department and whoever is responsible for the policies and let's go find the solutions. Not to give the answers why it can't happen. We need to be able to say, I can remember when I was in Trevor Manuel's ministry, he always used to say, Don't tell me the thing can't happen. Find the reasons why it can happen and let it happen. And it can happen. So we can't let early child development be a voluntary service. It's not going to work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, and your delegation. Really, as we have said, this was worth it. It was a discussion that is worthwhile. And it's one discussion that you could have for the whole day. So we're really, it's a pity that we can't continue with you. But as you wrap up, you know, what comes to my mind is to say, when you look at this department that you are dealing with, it will always be the fact and true that it's quite a very complex department, you know. And as we are saying, maybe the issue of focus is important, but unfortunately, there are so many of these things that just come alongside that have got that tendency even of defocusing, you know, those who are in charge of channeling and directing the department. For example, nowadays we're looking at this issue of insecurity of schools, what is happening, the violence that is going on, and of which it has got a direct impact on what you are discussing. There are so many things, the complexity of this department really, but if we do have sessions where we can discuss and openly look at the department, I think today through your input, there's so much that you have learned. You have assisted us. We are more richer than we were in the morning. And as we continue with our discussions moving forward, really, we are going to be utilizing this. And this document that you have just prepared for us, it's one document that we must handle with care, because there are so many other programs for the committee that are in this document that we are going to be looking at. Thank you very much. We are not chasing you away from our committee. In fact, we'll invite you even to listen to the AG's presentation that we are just about to take now, because what they are going to be raising does have got a direct impact on what we have just raised. So if you can still be with us as we continue with our meeting, I think even in future it will enhance our discussions. Thank you very much.
Sasha's going to stay. I'm running across the
desk. Across. Oh, okay.
Thank you very much.
We are Jim and I'm Sanjay. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Honourable members, can we just stretch for 5 minutes while the AG's office is still preparing their presentation? Just for 5 minutes. We're going to start at 11:35. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no.
Thank you.
like they are getting married.
Do you
Between the three of you, don't embarrass me when I see you on TV. I think that one of you should have born also such a one. And they have to go to
you.
One of
you.
You. One of you. The three of you. I
see.
Hello, Maggie. How are you? I'm okay. Who are you? Don't answer your phone.
No, I've got another phone. I've got two phones. I'll give you my second number.
Okay. You must also give me. Do you have another phone? You must give me two.
But you have my phone.
The one that we call.
Let me give it to you so that you can.
Yeah.
0599
3525
You have it,
not you? What is Venvel? Venvel is Venvel. You know, it's also inconveniencing Faith this morning when Faith arrived at one looking after Faith's children. Now,
so she said, well,
she was not a pig. Yeah, Faith borrowed it because went to Zimbabwe for elections.
Our 5 minutes is over. Can you say?
I had a person I could have
said. Ah, you may anything.
Honorable Bottas, can you be the head prefect and call those who are still up there? Okay, thank you very much. We are now starting with AFSA. I will give AFSA an opportunity to do the introduction and then they can shoot with their presentation, then we take the discussion from there. And DBE, on this one, I think you need to come forward because we are taking up even the recommendations that AFSA has made in the previous year. And in their presentation, they will even share with us how have they found them being attended to, then even you as DBE, because we are part of this item before lunch where you even appraise us on the manner that we have tackled the findings that have been there for the previous year or years moving forward, preparing and laying the background for your own presentation on your annual report tomorrow. But it's good for us as a committee to know from what has been raised, what is it that you have done, and how are we progressing moving forward. Can I then hand over to you, AFSA, to introduce yourself, then lead us in your presentation.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning to yourself, Honourable Chair, the Honourable Members, the officials from the departments and all the other officials that are in the room. We've actually packaged, after the audit, we've packaged and analyzed the findings that we've discussed with the department, and we've packaged them in the slides that has been distributed and will be shared with you. The purpose of sharing the presentation, Chair, is just to equip the honorable members with the insights that have been gained during the audit, give the honorable members an opportunity to clarify some of the things that have been reported, to provide context where that is necessary, and all of that is done to enable you to exercise your oversight role. I will start maybe just quickly with the introductions before we get into the presentation. My name is Sibongile Lubambo. I am the corporate executive responsible for the unit that is auditing the basic Department of Basic Education. I am leading the team from the ABSA. I will just add in the interest of time, Jim, sitting on my right is Mr. Kivesh Lunchman. He is the business executive responsible for the team that was part of this audit, looking specifically at the performance audit, the sector that would also be covered in this report. Sitting next to Kivesh is Dimas Leroux, who's the manager that was part of the team auditing the sector.
Nicholas, shall we get? Nicholas moved this side so that Mr. Nicholas Shawuke, who is also part of the government audit team, the gentleman sitting next to me is Vusi, who was the manager on the audit of basic Department of Education. The two gentlemen will take us through the presentation. Vusi will start and Nicholas will take over. The other officials that are sitting in the back, Nochansa Zoke, who is sitting there, she was the manager on the audit as well. There's a lady sitting, the second lady sitting there, a TV, who's part of our technical division that is joining us. There's a business executive sitting at the back, Ms. Fernanda Cabalizo, who's leading the team that is supporting us with the work that we're doing here in Parliament. I think sitting next to her, like, where's that? Okay. Step out. So together, Chair will be presenting and also dealing with the questions that we've raised. I will give over to Vusi to start with the presentation. When he's done, he'll give over to Nicholas, and then after that, we'll take questions. Thank you.
Thanks, President Executive. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members and the officials from the department. The presentation today, the first slide is a repetition promise from the AG as a constitutional mandate, as a supreme audit, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy, thereby enabling oversight and accountability and governance in the public sector, thereby building public confidence. So our role as the AG in the CPR processes is just to assist the committee on the audit that we performed to enable their oversight role in terms of the assessing the performance of the department. Slide 5 deals with the different types of audits that we do. The first one, we express an opinion on the financial statement, whether they are fair and reliable. And the second part is the audit of performance information. We're looking at the credibility and reliability of the performance report. And also look at the compliance with the key legislation in terms of the compliance for the department and its entities. Slide 6 basically deals with the different types of audit opinion that we can issue as an audit office. The first one we have is unqualified audit with no findings, which we call it, usually we call it a clean audit. Basically there we mean as an office we did not identify any material findings either on financial statements or on the performance information or on the key, or compliance with key legislation. In that case when we say the audit is clean, unqualified with findings, basically it means the department is either we did not identify any findings on the financial statement, or we identify findings, but the departments or the entities were able to correct. And also, we had identified issues on key legislation or on performance information, so it can either be both. Qualified opinion, it means the entities or auditee struggled with one or two accounts that they could not either provide credible evidence in terms of a specific balance. And then in that case, and then we could, because now we couldn't produce the reliable evidence regarding one or two balances. Adverse, it means basically there's a number of accounts that we could not agree with the department or the entity in terms of the financial statement. In that case, then we express adverse opinion. Disclaimer basically means there's a number of accounts that the department could not provide audit evidence for us to conclude on the figures that are presented on the financial statement. So in the simple terms, we're just saying we're distancing ourselves in that area because now we cannot express an opinion due to the unavailability of information or documents. Slide 7 deals with the color coding. We have green there indicating unqualified with no findings, yellow indicating unqualified with findings, the purple color indicating qualified with findings, the pink color adverse with findings, and the red is the disclaimer, and the blue is the audit that are abstaining, which indicates we don't have. And the presentation will be dealing with three entities, which is the portfolio of the Minister of Physical Education, which is the department itself, and Umalusi and Faith. So in slide 9, this is a wheel of accountability. as an audit office, usually we say the department before they set, or the auditee before they set their indicators, they need to do a thorough research in terms of which targets that they need to put in their ATP, because of in terms of them to fulfill their mandate. Also, those indicators must meet the SMART criteria principle in order for the indicator to be able to be audited in future. And the two part we're saying there, those in charge with governance or the senior management, they need to implement control in order for them to achieve what they are planning to achieve. And those controls must be monitored by all the assurance providers, level of the assurance providers, making sure that whatever that controls they implemented are yielding the correct results. In terms of the Act, we're saying if there's any poor performance or transgressions, that also must be dealt with. And then in that case, we are saying we are able to achieve, or at least to give you the vehicles to achieve your desired outcome, and therefore having an impact on the service delivery. Even though we say it does not necessarily, if this will is implemented, then you will have service delivery, at least it gives you a better light to achieve your service delivery. Slide 10 deals with the audit outcomes for the past 5 years. For the past 4 years, from 2013 to 2016-17, the department and its entities have achieved unqualified audit with findings. Basically, it just means in one of the two areas, in terms of they either have findings on performance information or findings on the key legislation. For the first time this year, for the past 4 years, the portfolio has been stagnant in terms of the audit outcome. And in terms of the current financial year, we see a regression in terms of the audit outcomes, with the QE receiving an qualified opinion on their financial statements. The issue here is just related to the infrastructure assets, which is ACD. During the audit, we could not get enough evidence in terms of the completeness of their immovable asset register. And also in terms of the value that assets are recorded on the asset register. So we could not satisfy ourselves based on the information that was available and the processes that the department engaged in terms of coming up with the asset, with the movable asset register. So slide 11 basically just deal with a snapshot of the portfolio. As you see there, the top corner, right left corner, no entity received clean audit in the portfolio. And also we're saying in terms of the quality financial statements, no entity in the current year or in the previous year submitted a quality financial statement. Basically saying when they submitted the financial statements, we picked up material misstatements which either the entity or the department were able to correct for 2016-17. And then even happened the same thing again for 17-18, with the department not able to correct all their misstatements, and that's the received qualified opinion. And we also want to recommend SAFE for keeping the same status as last year, submitting the quality performance report, and joined by Umalusi for the first time this year, where did not pick up any material findings on their performance information, and which the entity that also did not improve, receiving the same results as the department where we identify material findings on their performance report. And also on the key findings on compliance, so there's no entity that achieved, all three entities we raised findings on the key compliance with legislation, which that's why then you can see there for 2016 and 17 there's zeros, which means all entities were affected. And the bottom corner, right corner, in terms of the regular expenditure figures there, we see a reduction from the prior year. With the current financial year, with the 258 million what is incurred by the department. I'll just explain on the further slides in terms of the different compliance issues that you raised there. And slide 13 we zoom in on the infrastructure program of the department. So the, in terms of the RCD, which was progress 4, there were 4 indicators that related to RCD. So when we look at the budget, we saw that in terms of the allocation, they received 2 billion, of which was revised during the mid-year budget to 1.6. And in terms of the actual expenditure, the department was able to spend all the amount in terms of the 1.6 that was given. And in terms of the findings that we raised that related to infrastructure, so we had issues in terms of the process that were implemented by the department to ensure that the accruals are complete and fairly stated. And we also have problems in terms of the capitalized assets that related to the RCD, water and sanitation and electricity, and the value thereof that are being included on the financial statement. And also we had issues in terms of the completeness of the asset register and also the commitment balances that you see on the asset, on the commitment schedule. You see that schools that have been completed in 2014-15, but they still have commitment balances, which we thought that shouldn't be the case. And in terms of the procurement, we also had 2 issues in terms of compliance. The first one was on the non-performing contractors, where the departments identified those contractors, and then the contracts were terminated. In terms of following the supply chain process, in terms of appointing the new contractors, those projects were given to other contractors without following the supply chain processes and requesting the approval from National Treasury, which basically says if you follow the deviation rule, the expenditure mustn't exceed 20%. If it does, then you must request approval from National Treasury. And we also had other irregular expenditure in terms of the lack of contract management that related to some of these projects. And in terms of the predetermined objectives, water sanitation and electricity and the new building of new schools, we had findings that related to the validity and the completeness of those schools. In terms of the achievement, we're saying there's 0 targets have been achieved, which means all 4 targets that were set by the department, none of them were achieved. Basically, we mean they, even though they did something, but you find for new schools, they were budgeted for to build 115 schools, but they were able to complete 12. And then for sanitation, the budget, the target was 257, but they were able to complete 29. And for water, and water, they were able, the target was 344, but they were able to complete 43. And for electricity, the target was 134, and they were able to complete 17. So the other issues that we also identify as a value add, we also visited some schools in the different provinces, which was Eastern Cape, KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga and Free State. Then below there, we listed the issues that we identify in terms of the documentation that was submitted late, also in terms of the project cost being over or exceeded, and also the lengthy, the time. We find that the project has been budgeted to be completed within 12 months, but it will take longer, maybe for 6 months in terms of completion. We also identify other projects where water projects were implemented, but we find that the water are salty and then the kids are able to, are unable to use those water. And we also have issues in terms of the quality of the buildings or the construction work that was done by contractors. We find that the poor workmanship that is evident on some of these projects. In terms of us visiting this project, so we use expect to visit some of these projects in terms of findings that they identify. And slide 15 deals with the regular expenditure and fruitless and unauthorized expenditure. For the past 3 years, 2 years, the department did not incur any unauthorized expenditure. The 6 million was incurred in 2014-15, so it just came as a balance for this year. And for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we say they incurred 500,000 due to the one antenna that was appointed instead of the work that should be done internally. And 11 million related to the issue of Kari Gude, which almost 5.6 of it was recovered. And then the 2 million also related to some of the issues in terms of curriculum that was identified in the 2015-16 financial year. And in terms of the regular expenditure, we see also a reduction from last year, which from 622, and this year is only 268. Of that 268, there's 11 million that related to Umalusi that was identified by themselves, and that was also included in terms of them not complying with the procurement processes in terms of appointing the contractor. And the regular expenditure, that the 268, 38% of it related to the expenditure that was incurred in the prior year, but we were able to identify it in the current financial year. And then the 168 related to the payment occurred in the current financial year from the multi-year project. That probably the non-compliance was identified in the previous year, but the expenditure only came in the current financial year. The only two entities that are sitting on the red, which is Debbie and Umalusi, in terms of the regular expenditure, which says is the one was identified. And slide 17, the limitation, award tested but could not be tested. This issue, where the issues here on textbooks that related to the workbooks contract, and then here they post the issues under court, because one of the contractors complained, and then now the court is still looking at this matter. So we could not come to conclusions relating to the non-compliance issues that we identify on this. So we think the court to conclude, and then we'll report back to the committee on this matter. And then there was one quotation that related to Umalusi, that instead of Umalusi, where they did not follow the procurement processes in terms of identifying the preferred suppliers that they appointed. And also, we had also one issue that related to contract management for sales and monitoring, which... slide 18 also deals with fraud and contract management. Yeah, this one relates to the irregular expenditure that we identified in a previous year that were investigated. So the department was able to anomalously investigate all the cases of irregular expenditure. But you find that those investigations took longer than 3 months. Some of them take even more than 24 months. Because we know that for some of the department's investigations are sitting with Hawks, they are more than 24 months, they're still in progress. And slide 19, we have one issue where we identify one supplier that did not correctly declare on their when they were transacting with the department. In fact, they just falsified their declaration with the SPD-9, not declaring that they're working for the government. But in terms of the PSR, they're not allowed to do business. So here, this finding did not affect the department negatively. We're just saying that the department needs to investigate this case, and that we'll follow up in the next year audit. Then in terms of the root cause, we're saying there's a slow response in terms of improvement of the key control and addressing the risk, because we see that almost all the issues that are being raised year to year, the same issues that were raised in the current financial year. We're not saying that the department has not done anything, but we say that there's a slow improvement, there's a slow progress in terms of them addressing the issues that we picked up from the prior year into the current year. And we're saying also in the terms of the daily, monthly internal controls that were implemented were not effective to address all the issues that we identify in the previous year into the current year. We find that some instances the registers are not done on a regular basis. An example like a work in progress register that is only done sometimes quarterly, sometimes yearly. So we're saying some of those things should be done either monthly or quarterly, make sure that all, so that you can get used to the habit of doing these registers. And we also say in terms of the consequence management and poor performance, because of the same people that the same findings are coming up again from the inception of AFID, we've been reporting the same issues up until now. And we're saying in terms of the poor translation, it seems like it's not happening. Even though we know that the DG has taken some action, but because of some of the issues that are still coming up, they are not being addressed. And slide 21 deal with the request that was received from the community to report back to the committee on the management and utilization of conditional grant. We have only had the findings on that related to the EIG. The first finding there deals with from the province of Free State, where they spend money in terms of the project, not in terms of their project plan. And the second finding is related to the installation of the computer desk that was not part of the, because we know that EIG is the ring fence grant, so we can only do things that as per the framework. So here they were installing computers, which was also not part of the grant. And the third bullet there is the finding that related also to Free State, and saying they had a balance of the EIG, which is the money that they could not spend. But then when you look at the bank account, they're sitting with the overdraft of 1 billion. Basically, that means they spend the money, and according to the DORA grant, they need to pay back this money. But looking at the overdraft, which means they will not be able to pay it back. And we also had one finding for Northwest, where they overspend on one school. I think the project was implemented by IDT for Costa Primary School. Slide 923 deals with the assurance provider, different assurance providers, level 1, 2, and 3. The first there we have senior management for basic education. We're saying because of the persistent issues that we identify on the infrastructure, we're saying that we assess them as red because there's little improvements that we can see. And also says due to the number of findings that they identify on their financial statements, then we're saying that the management provides some assurance. And then DBE, we're saying that management provides limited assurance. And for DBE, in terms of the accounting officer, we're saying they provide limited assurance because of the issues that also persist on, and including the executive authority. They also provide limited assurance. And then the internal audit for says, we said they provide limited some assurance because of the number of reports that they could not finish in terms of their audit plan. And for DBE, Umalusi and FACE, we're saying that we assess them as provide assurance because they did what they could in terms of their mandate. And also the same for the audit committee and for the portfolio committee as well. In terms of the status of the internal control, so we look at the leadership, saying in terms of DBE, because we know that we had issues in terms of infrastructure, we're saying the oversight role that should have been played there was not sufficient. And also for Umalusi, in terms of the irregular expenditure that we identified. And we also said in terms of the financial performance management, DBE also required intervention. Due to the findings also that related to ACIDI, we looked at the action plan, we looked at the daily management processes that probably are not done correctly, because there were a number of schedules that could not agree to the financial statement. And also for Umalusi and FACE, this was related to the material findings in terms of related to the financial statement that we could not, in terms of their daily management, we also had findings that related to that. So that's why they were not able to submit the quality financial statement. But in terms of governance, so we didn't have any issues in terms of for all three entities. And in terms of the action plan, if you look at the action plan, they were saying that they remain unchanged. Because if you look at the action plan from prior, all entities were able to come up with action plan, but in terms of now, implementing those action plans became a problem, and there's little monitoring of those action plans that can be seen there. And in terms of the usefulness of performance, so we had one indicator, so that's why the department regressed there, that relates to one finding that related to the usefulness of the indicator for the district director. And the control overall, we're saying there's slightly regress there due to the persistent issues that we still identify on RCD and performance information. And also the basic financial and performance management, we're saying that there's regress because of the issues that still persist on RCD and also the Umalusi and SAIS, there's also these issues that we identify on their financial statements, which were corrected after the audit picked up those areas. And so in terms of IT and vacancies, so to say this, unchanged, which I've already touched on the assurance providers. And in terms of the recommendation, basically saying that the department must, including their entities, must develop the responsive action plan. And those action plans must be monitored on a regular basis to ensure that those controls that are included on the action plan, they're yielding the desired results in terms of report, financial and reporting. And in terms of the daily discipline, this needs to be done on a monthly basis or on at least quarterly or monthly basis to ensure that the audit outcomes really are improved. Because now you get used to in terms of preparing this document, and they can also be made available earlier to the audit so that we can help you improve the process. And we're also saying the effectiveness coordination between the department and the various implementing agents needs to be improved in terms of if we want to improve the audit outcomes, because we find that most of these issues emanate from implementing agencies. Either they're not submitting the documents in time, or the non-compliance issues in terms of the procurement. Basically saying that sometimes the department is not even sitting in some of these committees just to ensure that these implementations, they do comply with all the processes in terms of the evaluation of the tender. So if there is any regular expenditure that is we identify on the implementing agents, then in terms of the budget, because the budget is sitting with the department, then that regular expenditure will be in the department's books. And monitoring and evaluation process, we think also should be done on a regular basis and on either internal or externally, also must be done thoroughly to ensure that the credible and the reliable of the information that we receive from there. And slide 27 is just a formula that was developed by Robert Greenrod. Basically, we mean because we know that all departments have got specific mandates, which is we say is the monopoly, and they've got a discretion in terms of how that services is being will be rendered in terms of who they appoint in terms of the service contractors. Then we're saying that if then there's no accountability, there's no oversight, then that tends to reduce accountability and it increases the chances that corruption might thrive in those areas. And slide 28 deals with the sector outcomes. Basically, on the sector outcomes, there's two entities that improve, which is Free State and Mpumalanga. Both, like previous years, they received qualified opinions on their financial statements. So this year, they were able to clear all the issues that we had last year. So this year, they received unqualified findings. And we're saying also Gauteng regressed because previous year we did not have identified any material findings on their predetermined objectives, but in the current year we had material findings. And then the other department, PBE, also regressed in terms of the opinion that we issued in terms of the financial statement. And the other province probably remained the same, either with Western Cape Clean and the other ones with the findings on predetermined objectives and compliance with key legislation. And slide 30, Chair, these are the focus areas for our sector report. The sector report will be, we're busy compiling it and will be shared with the committee next year, January, February, in the process. So we had these six focus areas, the usage of and the verification of the HSM data and LURIS interface. We had school infrastructure, we had school management and governance, we have early childhood development, grade R, and then we have curriculum coverage, and then we have test group retention and retrieval. And the slide 2 just shows the flow of information to LURIS. There's two methods. The first one is HSM, the other one is the third party system. But we concentrated more on HSM because more than 80% of the information comes from HSMs. When you look at that, information will flow from schools to district, and from district to provincial data warehouse, and then further to LURIS. And there we have a few deficiencies also that we identify in terms of the IT security management and user access management and the IT continuity in terms of the control that were not adequately implemented regarding the policies and procedures. We also had issues in terms of the inadequate support that the school received from the district in terms of the IT support. Even though this one, when we ask question in terms of the support, we say maybe find that one technician is supporting like more than 50 schools, which sometimes in that other case is not practicable, not practical. And we also had issues in terms of the data quality because the information also needs to be audited by the provinces. So which KZN and Eastern Cape and Gauteng, they do not do due to the resources. So they do not audit the numbers that are sitting on HSMs on their database warehouses. And we also identify that there's a number of learners also in the information that did not have ID numbers, which could not, it becomes very difficult for us to check the validity of those learner numbers. And we also had issues in terms of the different versions that schools are using. We find that schools are sitting in different versions of SSMs. With the latest version, you find that there's improvement on the system, but you find schools are still sitting on the first versions of SSMs in terms of the controls. Because the later versions, the controls are improved compared to the earlier versions. So now there's no update process of updating to ensure that schools are sitting on the correct version of SSMs. And 6.2 deals with the infrastructure. This is the relates to the infrastructure EIG, that the issues that we identified in different provinces when we did the visit. So the first finding related to the number of projects that were delayed in terms of implementation. We find that the project is taking longer than is expected. And then other issues that we had that related to also to the EIG, the issues of maintenance, where we find that there's other schools that really needs maintenance but are not included on the maintenance list. And we also had identified issues that related to the quality, the poor workmanship in terms of the contractors that are not really putting their weight in terms of ensuring that they build proper structure. And we also find schools that were all built but were not occupied. And we also had issues in terms of the cost. We find that the project is taking longer now. There's additional costs that are being added into the project. And this also affected all 9 provinces. And the pictures there, just to share the quality or the poor workmanship that we identify in number of schools that we visited in KZN in Eastern Cape. As you can see, there's cracks in the wall and where they should have put lender, and then they didn't see that the wall probably will fall even any time. And then the other slides also deal with some of the pictures that we also took at schools that needed maintenance. And we find that these schools are also not on the maintenance list. The schools, the one on the top corner, we find that there's also water in class, but then when we visited here, there was learner in class, and there's a pool of water there in class. And also other classes, then there's potholes, which the maintenance there is non-existent. And the last schools there that we visited, also in Eastern Cape, you see that all the windows in the classes are broken. And also this was just the primary schools for small kids. And as you can see there, the cloud, on that day it was very cold. And the school there with no windows. And then and slide 69, I'll just hand over to Nicholas to continue from curriculum coverage slide.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I will be covering, in terms of the sector audit, curriculum coverage. Slide 89, in terms of the education sector audit objective, In terms of the audit objective, it covers the four sector focus area. Vusi has already talked about the two. The four that this objective and scope covers is curriculum coverage, textbook retention and retrieval, school management and governance, and early childhood development, grade R. In terms of the objective, we wanted to determine whether departments of education, in terms of departments of education, we're referring in terms of the value chain, the school, education district, provincial office, and DBE, whether effectively and adequately implemented management measures to ensure that the standards of education provision, delivery, and performance are monitored and reported. In terms of the scope of the audit, with regard to school management and governance, it was audited in 2016-17 with a follow-up on 2017-18, including also early childhood development, which was audited 2016-17 and a follow-up in 2017-18. In terms of for the audit, for the sector audit for 2017-18, the focus was on textbook retention and retrieval and curriculum coverage. With regard to our selection, 96 schools were selected, sampled from 21 districts, and all nine provincial education departments were audited. And also the role of DBE in developing and communicating policies. In terms of the audit for curriculum coverage, the focus was on mathematics, English for grade 3, 6, 9, and 11. The schools that were selected were the site visits were conducted in the fourth term before the school closes, looking at the work that was covered in the third term. And in terms of the school selection, we looked at the high-performing, low-performing high schools according to the National Senior Certificate results. And also, in terms of the primary schools, we looked at the feeder primary schools. And with regard to the selections of the districts, provinces that had more than 10 districts, we selected 3 districts and 12 schools, and provinces that had less than 10 districts, we selected 2 districts and 10 schools. And in terms of the district, we rotated the district. The district that we audited for school management and ECD in 2016-17, for 2017-18, we rotated the district. The next slide, in terms of the criteria for coverage, for curriculum coverage at school, in terms of the personal administrative measure, the PEM document, it indicates that the school management team, the SMT, is expected to monitor and report on curriculum coverage. And what we found at schools is that HODs at school level, they are the ones who are expected to monitor the teachers who are under their supervision, to check whether they use CAPS, Curriculum Assessment Policy Statement, and the Annual Teaching Plan, which were provided by DBE, in order to monitor curriculum coverage. And also, they need to make sure that they monitor whether educators have covered the topics, which I indicated earlier that we looked at what they have, the work that they have done in the third term. And also, where curriculum was covered in terms of identifying the deficiencies, whether was there any agreement with regard to corrective measures on what to do going forward in order to fix that. And also, they need to report on the status and the progress of curriculum coverage with regard to what educators have done. If I may indicate also what the Financial Fiscal Commission has said, to say that one of the things that they need to look at how to raise the issue of quality teaching. I think it also agrees to the issue of curriculum coverage. And also the principal of the school need to consolidate the report with regard to curriculum coverage with submissions that he has received from the HODs. And this report, the school will use what we call the NSLA, National Strategy for Learner Attainment, in a way of reporting to the district, to the province, and to DBE, and also in terms of reporting in the annual academic performance report. The next slide, 41, curriculum coverage findings and root causes. In terms of what we observed was that not all educators timely covered the topics as outlined in the ATP and CAPS, and HOD did not compile curriculum coverage reports, and as a result, principals could not report the state of curriculum. So it means if teachers have not covered and HODs have not reported, therefore the principal cannot report to the district. Schools did not monitor the implementation of corrective measures where curriculum was not covered as a way to indicate that in order going forward, what is it that they need to do. And also schools did not establish and implement systems and processes to monitor curriculum. Before I look at the root causes, some might ask what is the impact of curriculum not covered. I think in a way it creates a content gap where learners need to move to the next grade next year. Then there's that challenge. In terms of the root causes for these deficiencies, there's a lack of awareness, knowledge and understanding by newly appointed and acting school officials on the importance of monitoring curriculum coverage. And one thing that we see also is a lack of consequence for non-compliance and also inadequate monitoring and support by education district officials. And also the absence of an annual directive to school management teams to monitor and report on curriculum coverage from the district. And curriculum coverage challenges not identified and captured in the school improvement plans. The next slide talks to curriculum coverage district findings. In terms of the district should support schools through assisting principals and educators to improve the quality of teaching and learning. Without the report that principal need to submit with regard to curriculum coverage, the district will not know in terms of what are the challenges if reports are not submitted. And also, the district can support the schools through the school visits that they usually do with circuit managers, through circuit managers and subject advisors, and also observations, also cluster meetings that they conduct, and also other means that are at the education district disposal. In terms of the deficiencies is that the district did not communicate directives to ensure monitoring, because in terms of the schools, some were not even aware that they need to monitor curriculum coverage. And also the district did not report on curriculum coverage at all levels. And also they did not implement corrective measures. And this I'm saying we are referring to for the grades that were selected for the audit. And where the district visited the schools, there were no corrective measures that were implemented. And then the impact of this, before I go to the root cause, is that the district needs to report in the NSLA in terms of curriculum coverage. Then if the reports that are coming from the school are not adequate, that will mean what they are reporting is actually not adequate. In terms of the root cause, uncoordinated education district monitoring, support and reporting, which result in deficiency not identified and adequately addressed. Units in the district working in silos, if I may for an example, indicate that the circuit manager will visit the school, compile his report, the subject advisor will visit the school, compile his report. The two usually do not exchange reports to say, I have looked at also at the issue of curriculum coverage. Even when the subject advisor goes there, he's also going to look at the issue of curriculum coverage. So if the two, when they visit, they are able to exchange notes. The next page, slide 43, the audit findings at the Provincial Education Department, the PED. The PED is responsible for communicating policy directives to education districts and to schools in order to create that awareness that I indicated earlier, to say at school level there's this lack of awareness. So the responsibility of the PED is to, and also to provide guidance and support, and to support district and schools officials to implement new changes in policy. In terms of the deficiencies, the provincial department did not ensure that education districts submit consolidated reports on curriculum coverage. And also, the provincial department did not conduct monitoring of education districts to monitor curriculum coverage. In terms of the root cause, we have identified that ineffective oversight, monitoring, and reporting by the PED in order for to implement the standards of education. The next slide talks to the next focus area, textbook retention and retrieval. In terms of textbook retention and retrieval, with regard to DBE in terms of the audit criteria, we look at national policy development on textbook retention and retrieval, which is the responsibility of DBE, monitor and support provincial department on textbook and retrieval systems. In terms of the key findings, we have identified policy. With regard to policy, the policy that DBE still has is still a draft policy since 2015. And with regard to monitoring, DBE did not monitor the provincial departments. And where monitoring had occurred, we were not provided with sufficient reports for our analysis. And then in terms of the draft, as I indicated, it was not sufficient for assurance purposes. Again, also, in terms of the root cause, the issue of the draft policy, that there's no policy, which they've indicated that the waiting for public comment phase to finalize the policy, and in the, they are still in the process of incorporating the LTSM management into the financial management guidelines for schools. And another thing in terms of the root cause, the issue of poor record keeping and reporting, and also the inaccuracies in textbook retention and retrieval. The issue of the absence of the policy will touch on most of the issues that we have raised in terms of at the school level, at the district, and also at the provincial department. The next slide, textbook retention and retrieval at PEDs. In terms of the audit criteria, the PEDs is expected to establish LTSM policy and system for provincial environment. With regard to the finding, we found that the provincial department did not establish policies and implemented coordinated system. We know that the department has issued out circular S12 of 2013 to assist the provincial department in terms of what is it that they need to do moving forward in terms of retention and retrieval. And also, PED did not effectively monitor and accurately report on the retrieval of textbooks by school. This statement we will support when we look at the findings at school level, which will now be escalated to district. And before I go on to the root causes, just the impact in terms of the reporting in terms of the provincial department. The impact there will mean the department will continue to increase their spending on LTSM if books are not retrieved and if books are not kept you know, in terms of their lifespan with regard to keeping books for a period of 5 years. The next slide on page 40, on slide 47, textbook retrieval and retention at education district. Districts are supposed to provide guidance, monitoring and supporting schools on textbook retention and retrieval, and also the development of a consolidated report of school programs regarding textbook retention and retrieval. Also, the issue of policy comes in. In terms of the finding, we know that education district did not roll out any policy or guidance to schools to ensure that textbook management systems are implemented. And also, education district did not effectively monitor and evaluate the effectiveness of textbook management. Again, also, they did not implement corrective measures where issues were picked up. So the same issue with regard to the findings takes us to the policy, which in a sense outlines everything that needs to happen in terms of retention and retrieval. And with regard to the root cause, the impact there is that the district will always, there will be an adequate reporting in terms of retrieval, meaning that the records that are coming out of the school going to the district are not accurate. There's inadequate and ineffective functioning of LTSM committees at second and district level, and second managers and curriculum officials at selected district are not capacitated. We know that the second manager, when visiting the school, can also look at issues of textbook retrieval and retention, and also the subject advisor can do the same. The next slide, textbook retention and retrieval at schools. In terms of the audit criteria, implementation and monitoring of policy on textbook retention and retrieval, the LTSM committee, establishment of the LTSM committee. In terms of the finding, as I indicated earlier, it all relates and comes back to the issue of the policy. Schools have no policy to manage and guide retention and retrieval. In terms of those findings, I will want to take you to slide 49 so that I'm able to link the finding there with the picture. If we look at the picture top right, top left, my top left there, you see that the issue goes to the finding where we say did not perform quarterly inventory checks to identify missing or worn out textbooks, as you see the situation there. Bottom left, it takes us to the finding to say that they did not retrieve textbooks in a coordinated manner at year end to ensure 100% books are just collected and placed there. If we look at the picture, top right, it takes us to the finding that they did not conduct an annual LTSM audit and update the textbook inventory register to reflect the availability of textbooks. If I may also take you to the picture bottom right, which takes us to the finding that they did not formally impose responsibility on learners and parents where they undertake to replace damaged or lost books, which are some of the things that we picked up. And in terms of the root cause, we're again saying comprehensive and standard LTSM policy not adopted at all schools. LTSM challenges such as textbook retention and retrieval not included in the school processes such as the SMT and the SGB. I remember also in the discussion earlier with the Financial Fiscal Commission, they mentioned the importance, the impact that the school governing bodies have, and also inadequate and effective functioning of the LTSM committee at schools in establishing and monitoring textbook retention and retrieval. And again, the issue of record keeping, not uniform across all grade subjects, which means whatever information that they will submit to the district with regard to the amount of books that they manage to retrieve, it will not be accurate, because if they do not have the records, then it means that information is just sent and we are unable to. And another thing you might ask, in terms of the impact, the impact of learners not having a book is that you find that at the end of the day, learners will be sharing a book because books could not be returned to the school. The next slide. Slide 50 talks to early childhood development, grade R. As I indicated earlier, the audit of ECD was conducted in 2016-17. Our colleague was here last year presenting the same issue. I will just indicate so that I'm able to link in terms of the follow-up with regard to what we found in 2017-18. The issues that came out in 2016-17 was that workbooks for grade R learners were not available at some schools visited, and then the provincial department did not ensure that grade R infrastructure in terms of the classroom size and facilities complied with the minimum norms and standards. And then grade R learner teacher ratio in some school visited was above the norm of 1:30, and the school employed grade R practitioners without the minimum qualification NQF level 6 or RVQ 13. We recognize that some of the issues can be fixed overnight. In terms of the follow-up with regard to ECD, is that during further assessment at schools, with regard to infrastructure, classroom size and appropriate playground facilities and ablution facilities, and also the area that they looked at, also educator, teacher, learner ratio, with regard to the deficiencies and the root cause. The assessment revealed that deficiencies identified pertaining to the areas above were still prevalent except for LTSM. The provincial departments indicated that certain deficiencies identified require the phasing in of a long-time intervention up to 2030. And the recommendations, the National Department of Basic Education should finalize the policy framework to guide and monitor the establishment of grade R at all schools. Provincial departments should adhere to the prescribed grade R funding. The next slide, slide 53, talks to school management and governance. The same with school management and governance. It was audited in 2016-17 with a follow-up in 2017-18. And the same deficiencies were identified, that some schools did not submit the annual academic performance improvement reports and quarterly reports. And also some principals did not effectively coordinate the functioning of the school governing bodies. And also the principal did not ensure proper record keeping and follow-up of learner discipline cases. And some education districts did not provide guidance and support to principal in order for them to adhere to the annual management processes and also to make sure that they facilitate the SGB functionality in terms of arranging meetings, keeping records, meetings, and record of school plans and reports, and manage learner discipline to record keeping.
Waiting for lunch, that's why.
Oh, I see. Okay. Can I continue?
Yes, thank you.
I know that I see. Yeah, okay, you have copies. Slide 55 talks to the overall root causes for the deficiency identified in all the focus areas that I indicated in the beginning: curriculum coverage, textbook retention and retrieval, ECD grade R, and also school management and governance. School improvement plans. We know that schools are expected to have school improvement plans. And we think that school improvement plans do not reflect the realistic challenges of the schools and the measures to address such challenges. The issue of curriculum coverage, the issue of textbook retention, school management, those are some of the issues that they need to include in their school improvement plans. And another thing, that the school improvement plan is not aligned with the annual academic performance report, and also limited knowledge and understanding and awareness on the roles and responsibility by newly appointed officials at schools, especially SMT, and also lack of consequence management that I indicated earlier for officials not complying with the set requirement, and also uncoordinated district monitoring, support and reporting, which results in deficiencies not identified and adequately addressed, and also the absence of the analysis by DPE data reported by the provincial department to identify deficiencies that makes policy implementation ineffective. The next slide, slide 56, talks to the overall recommendations, and these are, they are structured for DBE, Provincial Education Department, district and schools. And I'll just skip to the slide 57 in terms of how the overall recommendations link to slide 57, the value proposition for improving basic education. Our analysis shows that the processes are there in place. It's only that they need to implement. Like, for example, we know that in terms of the school planning processes, there is the school self-diagnostic assessment that they complete. There is also the whole school evaluation and the school improvement plan that outlines everything that needs to happen. So as we are saying, everything is there. It's for the schools to implement. And also, in terms of performance management, we know that every school has the SMT that is responsible for the running of the school. And then we know that the school has committees, issues of LTSM, or we find that there were no policy, books were not collected. With regard to these committees, they are able to sort of help solve some of those challenges. And in terms of the school monitoring and oversight, we know that the SGB is there. Their role is to assist also in terms of oversight with regard to governance. We know that education district is there to support schools to visit. Hence, we're saying everything is there. It just needs implementation and monitoring. We know that there's national and provincial monitoring. In terms of school reporting systems, we know that schools report monthly, there's quarterly report, and there's annual school performance report. And in terms of school management and administration systems, we know that the department has SASMs and they have this, they have CMIS. And some of these challenges can be addressed using those systems that they have in order to make sure that the information is captured. And if the systems are utilized, then we'll begin to see changes. That was the last slide. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members.
Thanks, Nicholas. Chair, before I give over to you, I just want to take the opportunity to introduce Dr. Sakaran Rambeau, who just joined while the guys were doing the presentation. He is our education specialist in the office. Thanks, Chair. Find that some schools did not know that they need to
manage the curriculum. It's just but one, the curriculum covering. This is the core business of the two. We have got them documented, or whoever is in the two, not, you know. For me, when that was said, and that my business can just be, but we're still going to engage on that. Can I open up an online number for the engagement? I'm not going to be able to start with you. Unauthorized expenditure based on 2014 and 15 financial year still under investigation. My question now, like what, just give us an example. Which is this investigation that is still under investigation, that is still out? Then since 2014-15 as financial year. And then this fruitless and wasteful expenditure of capital, when, what is the time frame? of what was the time frame of it. When is this case going to be concluded? I think it is going less than they are now upon fight. But what was the time frame before? Since 2014, if not 2018, we were just hearing about Karibuze food. When do we have to, what is our time frame to conclude this as we meet each other, BBD and skip? Even the irregular expenditure that is 100% based on supply chain. This has been coming along. Are there no improvements on this area of not accounting, especially the three written quotations, which is the criteria of supply chain when giving the tenure? And then what is the also from this? The EIG fund, has ring-fenced. They are ring-fenced, and the provinces are using it incorrectly by diverting it to. Is there no other way that they can apply for diversion of funds on this fund? It is that to really put on on their own without consultation. Is there this is a ring-fenced fund. Is there no way that the provinces can apply to for diversion of funds from this EIG fund and so on? On FHLM's IT support, capacity remains a problem. It is a problem, and it will be a problem if we don't monitor where the service delivery lies, that is on the system. There is no capacity. There are no officials that are monitoring. One official has to monitor the whole. Is that practical? Because we come with and make that recommendation at 18. At least per so many schools, there should be so many officials. So that we see this person functioning well. Because if we don't have capacity on the ground, it will never be. And there is IT specialists that should support the schools on IT issues should be used as a center. It will be what about the IT amendment? Okay, maybe we will talk it. Can Chaperson, it is upsetting to hear that the core function of department curriculum coverage is having some needs to come down from the HOD's principals and what, not monitoring the PDs, not doing the health, the district, not doing the area well. What is your proposal? We have been talking for the past 5 years. We have been discussing the retrieval system is poor. If you go to school, you will hear that the school is claiming that the children don't bring, the parents don't care because they are not affected at the end. They will get the report
they look at, and they will not be penalized if they have no money, they get no money to do this. Do we have any suggestion on how to assist them to be able to do this retriever, to put this retriever, this retriever to this thing? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We want you to go on I'm happy to be as you see the problem, the way we are dealing with how we are dealt with these things in the way of human. And you know, the questions that you are raising are not only for the aid of the family, the daily human response, so that you can have answered.
I don't understand when you say that the actual achievement is not out of four, whereas when you look at the schools that have been built, it's at 12 and out of 115. So I just want you to maybe just clarify for me what exactly you mean by zero out of four. And also, you know, like when you see a 1.6 billion of irregular expenses, no one would ask, like, you know, whose responsibility was it in the first place? Like, who do we look at? You know, the department is going to be presented very soon, so we need to know who's actually accountable, who's the person that, and was the person held accountable in ensuring that, like, you know, such an expenditure, you know, that people, as they're saying, that this expenditure that is, unqualified body. And also, something was also mentioned about the accrual. What is the advantage of the department to have an accrual? Why would the department move not to pay accrual? What is the advantage of that? I don't know why. Because I heard you speak about something like that of that nature earlier. Maybe you can maybe explain to me what was the reason for that and what is the advantage of doing that. And also, the other issue is, because now like, I'm giving questions that I would have liked to ask the department, now I'm thinking maybe I can also maybe ask you as well, so that you can maybe clarify before we get to the department. You are also highlighting the issue of capacity as well in the department, and specifically in terms of risk management. So I just want to find out, like, you know, who's responsible. You know, one of those things that you say, okay, yes, we're going to talk about risk management, but now we have to understand, like, you know, who are the people that need to be accountable, because I have a problem with every time we talk about the same thing over and over again, and the department makes a commitment to say, these are the steps that we're going to take, but yet we come back again with the same issues, and we don't know was anyone charged, you know, what measures we're taking for accountability. So I just want to find out if you can maybe sort of like guide us on that, so that, you know, we know when, I mean, the person is here, so you can sort of like give us clarity of, you know, who should we be working on, you know, who's actually supposed to be assisting us in ensuring that we improve in the next.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. Honourable Bosson had a bit of a verbal go. She asked practically every single question. Listening to my colleague speak now, Honourable Machesi, she says that we continuously discuss the same issues. There's no improvement. If you go to page 24, that's where the crux of the matter lies. There is absolutely no leadership in DBE. And they say that we require intervention, or DBE requires intervention. And it is something that this committee, together with the minister, must look at, because if there's no leadership from the Department of Basic Education, then you can't expect the other entities to be in a leading if they have no example. If you look at the national policy on the development on textbook retentions and retrieval, because there's no leadership in DBE, nobody takes it any further, because there is no consequence management. We will never get the retrieval and the retention right if we don't start right at the top. The fish rots from the head down. So we need to ensure that DBE, the intervention, is looked at as a matter of priority. And then if I could ask the AG, there is no mention about oversight done at special schools. We need reporting from the AG, because this is a huge issue, please. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And maybe let me just start to appreciate this gloomy presentation. It's actually a gloomy presentation, Honorable Chairperson. The only thesis is what we need in South Africa. I'm raising it because we have been grappling with security, and I raised it earlier. Do the Department of Basic Education needs more funds? Mm-hmm. Or do we have an adequate odyssey of resources at our disposal to execute our mandate? And all the time we have been noted actually sector of basic education is underfunded. And may I say, Honorable Chairperson, probably for our purposes and considering this presentation, maybe it's a good thing that underfunded it is underfunded. Because if it was adequately funded, it means more wastage of resources of our people. You know, today, Honorable Chairperson, 31 years since Che Guevara has been executed in Bolivia. And he said, if you define a comrade, he said a comrade is someone that trembles with indignation every time an injustice is committed against our people. And the fact that we have a negative order today should be a huge worrisome factor for us. I mean, basic education is one of our key critical factors. You know, and I see the AGF also defined what means corruption. Quite interesting, because it says the monopoly of discretion, less accountability. Now let me first say, look, I think we must acknowledge that there has been an effort done in the Department of Basic Education. We must not acknowledge it. And how do we know that? Firstly, if you look at your irregular expenses, it's down. So no one must go out of this war and say there's financial incompetence. Because, what, 268 million. It's to take 268 million from 622 million. Now, any arithmetic says there has been good work done in regards to financial prudence. Alright? There has been an effort, and that must be acknowledged. Of course, what we are faced with here is an outcome of a decision that has been made by us to expand the mandate of the Auditor General. And what we are getting here is an expanded mandate and the consequences thereof, because the department actually gets qualified based on performance audit. That's the basic issue here. If you read the entirety of the report that I've gone through, it's about performance, the lack thereof, accountability, etc. So I want to, obviously, without disclaimer, acknowledge and welcome the work done by the Auditor General. And just want to say, Honorable Chairperson, look, we are going to engage the department. But the fact of the matter is, leave everything else. If there's not going to be decisive action taken against those that led the department to decline, if we are not going to do that, then the doctrine of the fish rot from its head will. But equally so, any foundation is built on its feet. So I think what we must do when we engage the department leadership is to request for them, because in the Auditor General it says lack of consequences. I mean, if you look at infrastructure built there, no one gets blacklisted. There's no contractor that has been blacklisted in the past financial year after the last Auditor General's report. And probably may I say I speak under correction if there is, but no contractor has been blacklisted on the website of National Treasury as provided by the law. Unfortunately, Honorable Chairperson, if that is going to be a continuation of the norm, we are going to give criticism, level criticism against the department. But if we are not going to demand decisive steps that must be taken, our powers will be behind our powers as the portfolio committee. So, look, I'm not a man in a happy space because it's not good news. You know, it's not good news, and I like the way the presenters of the AGF just simplified the presentation. The fact of the matter is people responsible for performance auditing, for the execution of our plans. This department, when we talk to the minister, there's a big core problem in the policy unit of the department, and that has actually led to be in very precarious situation. Because out there, the public, you know, when you get a negative qualification, people think that you are eating money. It's everything else, you know. So I think let me welcome from my side the presentation. Welcome that the financial prudence, there has been work done. But unfortunately, with performance auditing where it matters, I don't think they have performed today. I'll keep everything else in abeyance for when we meet with the department. Mm-hmm.
Another
I want to give as much
view on that. I know that it might be a critical statement for me, but based on the audit, you are able to assess whether there is intent and no intent, whether some of the target virtues that for ourselves, they are achievable or not. So, do you think that this department will ever get a clear audit? And is it okay for us to continuously measure the performance of the department on a clean audit? It might not be a successful discussion now, but it's something that we will also have to talk to and reflect on, you know. I was also, you know, motivated by the commissioner of the FSC when he said that some of the things that we did in 94 might not be relevant in 2018 because situations change, conditions, and everything, you know. Thank you.
if we can just talk to them, can ask us to understand. On page 25, we talk to the issues of working with the CFO's position. I don't understand what that means. I think we are there on page 25, the analysis that you made, if you can talk to us. And one other one, maybe the last one that I want, is to spend money for the internet. You can test it. Okay, let me make an example. You build pit lashes. There are pit lashes at schools. You build the flush toilet without water in the area. Let me make another example. For water, supply of water, the department will build more homes where you find that they get salty water. Then you come in development to say there is not the home. In your analysis, in the way you come up with the findings, do we take into consideration that there are other areas that are beyond their control? Like, for an example, in last year or 2 years ago, where the department had to beat the school, but because the school was not accessible, they had to make sure that a bridge is being built, you know, for that school to be accessible and cater for the learners that need to go to that school. I know the bridge is not budgeted for, but how do you classify such an internet, you know, spending sometimes where they want to make sure that they are, you know, do you understand me? Mm-hmm. Well, I know you categorize it as race school or what, but do we look at the circumstances and the reason why they spend it? But now, what is more interesting in this one, the water is there, it's only that it's salty. The department is salty. But when you go and do your monitoring, you find that this is unusable water. And they find you towards the department. How do you correct that moving forward so that at the end of the day, even the findings that you come up with, yes, we fully agree. Because when you come to the department, the issue of infrastructure, you need to talk deeply on. You know very well that that is one area that you are not performing very well. And looking at the findings from the years that you are coming from, any improvement on the side, and from here, where are we going to? But also for me, it goes back to the Office of the AG. These are the findings that have already been made. You have been always raising them the way you are raising them even this year. But for all these years, you did not qualify the department over these findings. So what has changed in this financial year that you are in? Why have you not given the department these, you know, these results, these findings that you are getting? You see, because what you are coming up even now, comparing it to the previous years, there is nothing new, even from the past. But we see the way that you have qualified them is changing. And that you are telling us that they are totally regressing moving. So we need to balance all that if ever we can talk to us. Thank you very much. Can I hand over to you? I know this is even going to come in, but you are not going, the issue of your internal audit controls, they come here because you are reflecting on what has been raised.
Thank you so much, Chair, honourable members. I would answer some of the questions, Chair, and Lucy and Sakalani will help me in responding to some of them. I think I would start from your question, Chair, and try and work it out. That's okay. So the last question that you asked around one, the findings that were released, whether we consider matters beyond the department's control and do we factor in some of the issues. Just one thing that I want to clarify, Chair, is that if you look at page 13, some of the issues you're talking about are sitting under value add. These are some of the performance issues we're just raising so that the committee and the department can look at it and find ways to improve those areas in order for the performance to improve. The example you made around the bore being built but the water is faulty. So it's value add in the sense that yes, you would have build the borehole, the water is coming, but if the kids can't drink the water, we need to sit back and say the main objective of me wanting to do this was so that the kids can have water. But if after having done everything, they still can't drink water, what is